Everybody, and welcome back to another episode with your internet historians. I'm Nicole.
I'm Lisa.
And that's Alec, it. Yeah, Alec's not here today, guys. She's on vacation.
She's on a cruise.
Enjoying her life. Yeah. But yeah, what's new, Lisa?
Okay, so I went to Outside Lands. Remember last week I was talking about that? So things like pretty much worked out. I was like really stressed out on Thursday because I went to my office in the city and I forgot something and we had to go back like that same day. And I was like having a meltdown over it because I just couldn't believe it. But then Friday came and we were like, let's just take our time. Like there's no rush getting in there. And I got my clothes and everything like went well. It was actually a really good time. We even came back early. We were supposed to stay there until Monday, but we were like, F it, let's just come back early. And it's been a lot better.
That's good. You were, how many days were you at Outside Lands? Just the one?
Three.
Or three? Oh, you were there for all three. Oh, okay.
All three. Yeah.
For some reason, I thought it was, you were just going one of the days. I don't know why I thought that.
No, but no, we even went to go eat at our old, like favorite restaurant. We used to go to this like shabu restaurant every freaking weekend. And obviously during like in 2020, we couldn't go at all. They pretty much closed the entire time. And I think they have like another restaurant in San Bruno or Burlingame. I can't remember. And we just never made the trip out there. But they finally kind of opened it up again. And we went in and we're like, yay. Even though it was like not exactly the same, it was still like the food was still really good.
Yeah. So you didn't get to see Vanessa Hudgens or anyone else?
I did not. It did look like she was in the VIP section. So
there, I mean, that would explain. I didn't even realize there were like different sections. I mean, I guess I did, but I didn't realize they were like that separated, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I guess I didn't really understand it either, but I was kind of looking more into it after you pointed her out. And I do remember, so they have these kind of like, there are these like sections that are closer to the stage. And I was wondering too, because I was like, well, all the food vendors are in the G&A section. So what about like VIP? And I guess VIP has their own food vendors there too. So
interesting.
I guess they don't even need to leave their area because they can get food. They have their own bathrooms. They have their own water stations. They have everything there. Like the only reason they would actually move around is to go to a different stage. So that's probably the only time if she was moving from one stage to another stage. But
so, yeah, so I don't get it. So for the VIPs, do they have their own stages in? Like,
no. So let's say like there's, okay. So the way it's set up is that there's like, I don't know, maybe let's just say five stages. I don't really remember. And they're kind of all scattered around through the park. And where her picture was, it was like the main stage called like Land's End stage. And there's like a section that's kind of closer to the stage. It's on the outskirts, a little bit like cornered off like this. So in the middle, it's like, you know, the floor, and then on the corners like this, it's VIP. And yeah, in that, those areas, they get their own seating, they get their own food and their own drinks. And then if she wanted to leave that air, like that stage to go to a different one, she'd probably have to leave VIP and then walk to the other stage. But they, it's the same, like they're seeing everything the same. It's just that like, they don't have to struggle to get up close, you know?
Yeah, I get it. Damn. Yeah, because I was like, what the? Because she was wearing like onesies, I guess, the whole weekend, like for Halloween, but they're like costume type onesies, I guess.
I didn't know she was dating that guy. I like looked him up and he's younger than us. I was like,
yeah,
wow.
He's like a baseball player or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think her last boyfriend was younger than her too, but not by much. I don't
know. No,
think.
Not as much as him. Yeah,
I think he was younger though. But I don't know. I watched her. So I watch sometimes like people's like house tours or like decoration tours or whatever the hell on YouTube, because I just like getting inspo. And hers randomly popped up on my like what is it,
is suggested. This is this like architectural
The AD.
Okay.
I actually really liked her house, surprisingly, because I don't know, she always like, even like there were like some boho, because I'm not really like the boho type vibe type of decorator or like those usually, but even hers, for some reason I kind of liked it. I was like, you know, it actually works, because it wasn't like too much. I felt like it was like enough, but I was like surprised by how much I liked her house. But her in general, she just acts like kind of fake sometimes, like when she's,
her voice, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, is that really your real voice?
Yeah, like how she was acting, I was just like, ooh, cringe kind of, because it just didn't seem like genuine how she was acting. But whatever. I don't know. She's something else. I follow her on Instagram too. And I'm just sometimes her posts and I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, she's very over the top and like,
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Like kind of, I don't know, if I saw her in public, I'd probably think they're like obnoxious and whatnot, mm-hmm. but
I'm surprised, at her costume, because I know everyone kind of calls her the Coachella queen.
Yeah.
Because you know, and I know that I will have to say, I can understand if she wasn't sure about the weather, because, you know, it could have rained, but but the weather forecast said it wasn't going to rain. And it was like, mostly the fact that you didn't know if it was going to be super foggy or sunny. Like, the forecast was said that on Saturday it was going to be cloudy. And so when I saw cloudy, I just assumed it was going to be like gray and maybe like foggy and cold. And Saturday was actually like really hot. And I was wearing this like big jacket. And I had to hold it like most of the time because I was sweating. Oh. Mm-hmm. And I can understand, like, it's kind of, that's a difficult part about going to outside lands, is just planning what to wear, because it could, you don't know.
You don't know the weather.
Yeah. Really warm, really cold. So I guess I'm just surprised she just like wore a onesie. Expecting,
I know, and they looked pretty like thick too.
So I know, a lot of people did that, which is totally understandable. You'd rather be comfortable. First of all, they don't have nice bathrooms. It's mostly porta potties.
Yeah, I hate porta potties.
I will have to say that I went to Coachella as well, and they have one section where it's like nice bathrooms, but they also have porta potties, and the porta potties there felt like, I don't know why. And I think it's because of the heat that made it gross. Mm-hmm. Like the smell's a little more overwhelming versus in San Francisco, since it's cooler.
Yeah.
I couldn't smell anything. Ugh. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Dude, I had to go to freaking porta potty talk. I had to use a porta potty one time when we were in Joshua Tree. Oh my God. That thing was so freaking disgusting. I hated it, but like, I had a good bathroom, obviously hella bad. So I was like, oh, okay, I'm just going to toughen it
up. If it's number one, it's like no problem, you know,
but still, yeah, it was number one, but still I was like, oh my God, this is fucking disgusting. I just didn't want to touch it. I just hate being able to see everything that other people have done. And it's just disgusting. Yeah. I'm just like, ugh.
Well, but I literally, so they have these like rules, this bag policy. Basically, you either have a clear like backpack if you want it to be bigger, or you have to have a pretty, really small bag. And I had a fanny pack. Literally, my fanny pack was packed with things just for the bathroom. Like, I had toilet seat covers. I had like tissues. I had little like these wipes, these individual wipes where you can just and like wipe yourself. I had wet wipes. I had hand sanitizer. I had like literally everything just for the bathroom. And Lisa's like, oh my God. I'm like,
I mean, hey, like, you know, that's like the one part where it's like, you don't want to be like, I don't know, like, I just hate, I don't know. I just hate how nasty and dirty they are. And just like,
but let me tell you something. The thing I was thinking, I was like, is it worse to be in there, like where it's, you can see everything, or when it's like pitch black, because there's no light in there. God. So, and you know, Golden Gate Park is a park. It doesn't have a lot of light either. So when the sun would go down and get dark, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to stop drinking because I don't want to go in there without a light, you know?
Yeah. And then I'd probably have to use my phone or something to
I'd be like terrified that I accidentally dropped my phone.
Yeah. I was going to say that too. Yeah. I'm glad you had fun though. Okay. Well, after all that porta potty talk, in today's episode, we're going to be discussing the history behind the movie Milk. In 1972, Harvey Milk and his then lover, Scott Smith, leave New York for San Francisco, with Milk determined to accomplish something meaningful in his life. Settling in the Castro District, he opens a camera shop and helps transform the area into a mecca for gays and lesbians. In 1977, he becomes the nation's first openly gay man elected to a notable public office when he wins a seat on the Board of Supervisors. The following year, Dan White kills Milk in cold blood. So, what do you think, Lisa, of the film?
I actually do like this film. I know it's kind of slow in the middle part. That's about it. But then it also makes me just like really sad, because I think he could have accomplished like so much more if, you know what
I know. It was only a year. I didn't realize it was only a year.
Yeah. He was only in office for a year. And so, yeah, it just makes me sad that happened, but I'm very grateful for what he did accomplish. I think he did do a lot of great things, and I'm glad we can continue to like remember him and watch this movie and learn more about him. Because before moving to San Francisco, I actually didn't know anything about him, to be fair. Like, Again, I didn't know about anybody in history. It's sometimes I'm like, what are they teaching us in school? Like, I don't know Harvey Milk. I didn't know who Ruth Bader Ginsburg was, but I didn't know him. And then there's a restaurant. Do you know this? The I think it's called Harvey on Castro. Oh, okay. So there's a restaurant called Harvey. I'm pretty sure it's called Harvey on the Castro. And then somebody was like, oh, it's probably named after Harvey Milk. And I was like, I don't know who that is. And I remember looking that up and I was like, oh, he's some like somebody important. And then I never had the chance to actually like look him up. And then I watched this movie and I got to know a little bit more about him.
I can agree. It is kind of slow, like in the middle parts of it, but I feel like overall, even though it was slow, I was like kind of interested in it. So because like you said, I haven't really learned much about him as a person. So I was very like, when I was watching, I'm like, oh, I want to know like what he did, you know? So it was entertaining me in that way because I hadn't like I didn't know anything much about him either. And then I wanted to look up to see if the camera store, because I've never noticed this camera store before, like, you know, now I guess it's like a center for like,
it's not whatever. There anymore.
It's not,
I don't think so. I've never seen it.
Well, they turned it into like a site for people, like for organizations, like to like come there and do stuff. So it's not really like a camera store anymore, but I looked it up because I was like, okay, have I ever passed this thing before?
And I don't think I have.
I realized where it's at now because I had to look. I just looked it up today on the map. And it's, you know where that Walgreens is at on that corner in Castro?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if you keep walking up.
Yeah, like I don't walk that far up.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I was like, that's why I've never seen it because I never went past that really.
But you know that Walgreens? And then right across the street, there's that restaurant.
Oh, is it right there on the corner?
That's Harvey. Yeah. And you know what's crazy?
I never looked at the, I don't think I've ever like paid attention to the name. That's
You know what's funny is that, okay, so obviously whenever I watch anything that's located in San Francisco, I'm like constantly like nitpicking if they've got it right. The only thing is that definitely for this movie, it's set in the 70s. So, I mean, I can't nitpick that much because it's a different time. But did you hear them mention Toad Hall?
Not that I can remember now.
Okay, so there was a time where they were like, oh, the police are at Toad Hall, like, you know, beating the crap out of the people there. And Toad Hall is still around. I've been to Toad Hall. It's a club. Like, again, if you go to that Walgreens and instead of going straight, you turn right and you keep going up, there's Toad Hall.
I'm trying to think.
Do you remember where Molly Stone's is? Like, if you
I don't know the names of anything. That's why I'm like trying to remember.
Because
I know there was a bar/club that I've been to. I don't know what its name
was. There's
so
many.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was like, but it was like in that same direction where you're talking about. When I was looking at his camera shop, though, I was like, man, I wish I like knew then what I know now, and then I would have like passed by it or like, you know, whatever. It's pretty cool because like I guess the whole building, you know, like, well, the apartment above the camera shop is where he lived, and I guess that and the camera shop, they like kind of turned into like a place where they can, I forget what specific, if it's a specific organization or what, but they like do a lot of, you know, like civil rights, gay rights type of stuff in there.
You know what's funny is that when I was typing in Harvey's name, Harvey Weinstein kept popping up. I was like, no, not him, I don't want to know anything about
wrong
him.
Harvey. Yeah.
The good one, Milk. So Harvey was born and raised in New York. He has an older brother and he played football and developed a passion for opera in high school. He majored in mathematics in college. And then after graduating, he joined the Navy during the Korean War. He was discharged in 1955 with the rank of Lieutenant Junior Grade. So I don't know. I just felt like his upbringing was very basic.
No, it was. That's one thing too. I did they mention that he was in the military in the film? I don't remember that.
I think they did very briefly.
Oh, okay, maybe that's like, because I was like, I didn't catch it if they did. But
why did Harvey move to the Castro? At the end of World War II, the major port of San Francisco became home to a sizable number of gay men who had been expelled from the military, and they decided to stay there rather than return home and face the shame of not being hetero. So it sounds like Harvey was just trying to discover himself a little bit more. He grew tired of New York and moved to Dallas, then left there. He drifted between California, Texas, and New York without a steady job or a plan. And finally, he met Scott Smith, and they decided to move to San Francisco with their savings. And after a roll of film was ruined, they decided to open a camera store on Castro Street with their last $1,000. So part of me like loves that about Harvey as well, because I think me right now, there's still that little bit of me that just feels like I haven't discovered this true passion yet, which is like, you know, I'm not like ashamed of. It's just, you know, I feel like I still have a whole life I've got to figure out. And I think it was great in the movie, they were talking about his 40th birthday. And to me, it's like, that kind of is inspiring that he, to me, he, it's he went through what you're supposed to do, right? He went to college, he joined the Navy, he fought for his country, he had good jobs. He said it in the movie, he worked on Wall Street, he majored in mathematics. Like, he's a smart guy, but that didn't make him happy. Like, doing what you're supposed to do didn't make him happy. And he continued to search for a passion, for something to drive him, for a cause. And he found that in the Castro. So yeah, so when he opened the store and everything, I think it was him saying enough is enough. And he became more interested in political matters because he faced civic problems and with the policies that he disliked. He was informed that he owed $100 as a deposit against state sales tax in 1973. And he went and complained for weeks, and they finally lowered it to $30. I should have looked up how much that is. So I was like, $100, I know,
be
bad.
But actually, yeah, I know. Because even for the part when they were talking about it not being salary, a livable wage. Yeah, I was like, oh, I actually looked that and up. I looked, yeah, and it was, oh, how much was it?
So, okay, so $9,600 in 1978 is worth $40,389 today.
So that isn't that much.
No, exactly. Like, but okay, it's hard too, because it's like $40,000 is not a lot, but I don't know exactly what the living cost was at that time either.
Yeah,
it's really hard, but I would assume that it's still quite expensive, and more than if you were living in like the suburbs.
Yeah.
So Harvey also got upset because a teacher came into the store asking to borrow a projector because the equipment at school didn't function. He felt like no one actually voiced his community's problems, and he felt like he needed to be that voice. So that's why he decided to run for city supervisor. He said, I finally reached the point where I knew I either had to become involved or shut up. That's so like,
that is true. So freaking true. I was gonna say that's so true, because a lot of times, even back at home, because, you know, people like to bitch about where they're from or whatever the fuck. And people are constantly like bitching about things that happen like in Stockton. And me and Chase are like, well, then do something about it. Like, stop bitching about it and do something about it. If you're like upset about the way whatever, or like, you know, vote in whatever elections that we have in the city, so that way like things can actually change. Just stop like talking shit, you know?
Yeah. It's even the smallest things, because sometimes if my, like, let's say there's like a friend or acquaintance who like are complaining, like sometimes I'm just like, I'm just going to be quiet. True. Because I'm not going to involve myself in your problem, you know? So I'm just going to stay out of it.
Or, and it's like, change something. Cause even, yeah, we do talk about that too, when people complain about stuff personally, like that's happening in their own lives. And we're just like, well, then do something about it. Like, if you know, like, this is a problem and you want to change it, then like work towards steps to doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But
I have like a whole other tangent about
that. We're like, we could go on and on about
that. I really can. Yeah. So, but yeah, what he said is still true to this day. I think, well, no matter what, that's how it is. If you want to change something, you have to either do something or just shut up. This part was kind of hard for me because it's not exactly as straightforward as the movie made it like look, but from what I can tell, he ran for city supervisor 3 times, once in 1973, and he lost. He barely lost, though, because he came 10th out of 32 candidates. And if the elections had been reorganized to allow districts to elect their own supervisors, he would have won. He ran again in 1976 and lost, and then finally won in 1977. But in 1975, that's when he decided to cut his hair, shave his beard, stop smoking weed and going to bathhouses. And I was like, oh my God, you went to bathhouses? Like, I don't know how popular they were.
It was the 70s.
Yeah, but I like heard a little bit about it, I don't know, a couple of years ago. I drove by this like place, and Luis was like, that used to be a bathhouse. And I was just like, what? Like, and it kind of still looked like a bathhouse, and but it looked deserted from what I can tell on the outside. So in 1976, Mayor George Moscone appointed him to the Board of Permit Appeals and made him the first openly gay city commissioner in the U.S. And he spent 5 weeks on the board before Mayor Moscone was forced to fire him when he announced that he would run for the California State Assembly. So I guess what the movie made it seem like is that Harvey kept running back to back to back until he finally won, whereas it's not true. You know, he went in 1973, and then after he lost, I think he was like working on a new campaign, but then he did talk to a lot of different people and got himself really involved with head honchos, I'm trying to say, but you know, if he's talking to Mayor Moscone at that point, that means he's really like developed a network. And that's why he was appointed in 1975. And then, yeah, anyways, but eventually he won in 1977. And if I'm being honest, I bet that Harvey could have been mayor at the rate he was going.
Yeah. And people seem to really like him too. Like, not just like, well, from what I was doing from my like little bit of research, I didn't really talk about this in my section, but it seems like, yeah, he was involved in like gay rights or whatever, like making sure like, you know, people had certain rights, but he seemed like he also paid attention to what, like just in general, his district wanted and like what was something that they were concerned about. And I think that's obviously something good. Like, he's not just focused on his own agenda. He's like actually listening to what his people want for like their community. And he like does things to like actively get those things, you know?
I was listening to like, cause you know, the way that Sean, that's his name, right? Sean Penn. Yeah. The way he was like talking, I was like, I remember watching an interview where Harvey does have kind of like a higher pitch voice, but I kind of wanted to hear it again. And so I went and like looked for an interview, and they said that, you know, he talked about opening a like senior home or something like that. And I've heard that because I watched Grace and Frankie. Have you seen that show?
Mm-mm.
With Jane Fonda? Mm-hmm. And they've talked about how like now that they're older, they kind of are ignored. And I never even thought about that, but I guess I can totally see that's true. Like, you know, when you're at a bar, the bartender is going to go to like the set of young women, or if it's a girl, she'll go to the young men. And unfortunately, like the older ladies are kind of left behind. So I thought that was really cool. And he even talked about public transportation. They showed him like on the bus, and they said that he takes the bus to work because he wants there to be better access to the public transportation. He wants less cars in San Francisco. And I'm like, oh my God, that's been a problem.
Talking about like that whole thing with him and Dan White, and how like Dan was like, oh, are you going to be on board for that youth facility thing? How he didn't want it in his district's like area. And what I thought, because even though like at first, I guess Harvey was like, yeah, sure, I'll support it. But then he's like, once he learned more about what the facility was and like what it was going to do and who was going to help, he decided to like change his mind on that.
Right.
And that's what I think is cool about Harvey. It's like, he's like very, just like, he's taking what's going to benefit the people in general. And I feel like to him, if it helps like the underprivileged or like, you know, like often ignored like parts of the, you know, community, he was very much on board to like help bring those groups of people up. And I know it's very commendable.
And he did his homework, you know.
Exactly.
He could have just said yes.
Like you said, he wasn't a dummy.
Yeah,
totally. But yeah, so okay. So we're gonna be learning about his politics as supervisor and more about his assassination, which we're gonna get right into after this short ad break. Now I'm going to get into his politics as supervisor and into his assassination. So, which I mean, honestly, like, even though the film, I feel like obviously they always have to like make things a little bit smaller, but I feel like overall they kind of got it right in like the timeline, I guess you can say, of things that he did. They did kind of touch on things briefly. Maybe they didn't delve deeply into anything, but they did obviously kind of get a small rounded section, like, you know, of who he was as a person and stuff, or like what he stood for and did. But yeah, so as seen in the film, Harvey had a gusto for gay rights when he was sworn into office. He began his work by supporting a civil rights bill that outlawed discrimination based on sexual orientation, which again, we did kind of see in the film. Dan White was the only supervisor that voted against the bill. Dan, of course, took issue with the fact that Harvey did not support his initiative to ban a youth facility that would be placed in his district, and because of this, would vote against everything Harvey supported. I wish we had time to talk about Dan White too,
I fully,
but fortunately we don't.
I could say like a little bit about him because I read a little bit about him.
Yeah, because I wanted to look into like his whole life and everything too, but I was like, no. Another thing Harvey worked for was the opposition of Prop 6, which was a prop created by a man named John Briggs, who was a Republican politician serving in the Senate. He had run for the California governor, but luckily he did not get that since he was forced to drop out of the race. He did get a lot of support for his proposition, however. The proposed law would have made firing gay teachers and any public school employees who supported gay rights mandatory. Briggs' messages supporting Prop 6 were pervasive throughout California, and Harvey Milk attended every event Briggs hosted. Milk campaigned against the bill throughout the state as well and swore that even if Briggs won California, he would not win San Francisco. In their numerous debates, which toward the end had been honed to quick back-and-forth banter, Briggs maintained that homosexual teachers wanted to abuse and recruit children. Milk responded with statistics compiled by law enforcement that provided evidence that pedophiles identified primarily as heterosexual and dismissed Briggs' assertions with one-liner jokes.
I did like that part where they were like, how are you going to tell if they're a homosexual? Are you going to suck them off or something?
Dude, that whole like back and forth. I don't know. I like you said, Holly Harvey wasn't a dummy. Mm-hmm. Like for some of the, I think it's because he was kind of jokey a lot. It's not that mm-hmm. I thought he was dumb. I just didn't know necessarily if he was as serious of a like candidate or a supervisor as some other ones.
And but, he was very flirtatious too.
Yes. And so like, I think just like, especially during that debate scene, just like, I don't know, like, I mean, I'm sure maybe it wasn't exact. I mean, I don't know if that's how he carried himself in like IRL, but in the film, I feel like he like, I don't know, he knew when to like be a serious person and when like what times called for him to be kind of more jokey or whatever. And
I think that's also kind of his way to like it's like a defense mechanism in a way to kind of, you know, if something maybe is too serious, maybe he has to like just throw in a joke in there to kind of lighten the mood. Maybe he couldn't also handle things like that serious, you know?
Yeah, no, but I mean, yeah, I feel like he was good at what he did. And like, he came with like the facts and things like that to back up whatever he was saying, because, you know, obviously I think also it's because of his sexuality, I think he had to be like that in order to, you know, be seen as a serious person, because I feel like you can be like jokey like him, but I don't know. I feel like maybe both of those things combined, like put on a, like it made it not as like scary or whatever for everyday people, I guess, to like see like a homosexual person, but like, I don't know, you know, it made it more personable and stuff like that, and not something to like, be fearful of, I guess. I'm like trying to think of how to word it. But
well, I agree with you, because if he just came out there and he was just kind of like straight edge, you know, just like any other politician, I guess there is a little bit like, are you like really gay, or are you just kind of saying that for like the gay community?
Yeah.
And I think because so many people associate with like gay men and them being a little bit more flamboyant and having a little bit more, I don't know, attitude in their tones or something. It's, I think for him, he kind of also had to represent his own people. Like I said earlier, he felt like his community didn't have a voice and he had to be that voice, and he couldn't just change the voice so it appealed to the majority. He had to be the voice that everyone knows.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, people want to vote for somebody, you know, that they connect with and stuff like that. And that's one thing too. I feel like a lot in the film, he was seen amongst his people and like the community a lot too. You know, obviously he lived right there on Castro, and I don't know. I liked that he was very just involved in all.
He even took those phone calls. Around. I don't know if that was real either, but you know, maybe it was.
I think he did have one of the phone calls, that kid, at least for sure. I think in my research, he did talk to that guy. This is a quote. If it were true that children mimicked their teachers, you'd sure have a hell of a lot more nuns running around. Because I guess, you know, at the time there'd be nuns teaching the kids.
And that was in the movie too. Oh,
he did say that? I don't know.
Yeah, he said that in the movie.
Yeah. On November 7th, 1978, the proposition lost by more than 1 million votes. Damn. Astounding gay activists on election night. In San Francisco, 75% voted against it.
Well, yeah, because it's a freaking stupid.
Like, I know it is. Well, and like we were, like they were saying, how could you even, like, how would you be able to know? Like, you can't tell who is gay and who is not gay unless they just say like, yes, I am. Or like, I don't know if they were just planning on asking the question, like, are you gay or homosexual? Or like, you know, like, how would you know? And also too, in the movie, what I liked is when he was saying, when he was basically pointing out to Briggs, like how stupid this whole thing is, or like what he was saying, because he was saying, I forget how much of the percentage, like obviously heterosexual people, whatever, doing, the guy was like, no, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that we can make it lower. Like, we can't prevent pedophilia, but we can like help make it lower by getting rid of the homosexuals. And I'm like, you're like, you don't make sense, dude.
Yeah.
You don't even hear.
Yeah, he said something like, he said it was a percentage of like pedophiles. And then Harvey was like, so you're saying everyone's a pedophile? And he's like, no. You know, like it was something like that. It's like the way he was like,
yeah, he just stating the stupid percentage.
Yeah. And then I hated that he brought up like bestiality. I'm like,
oh, I know.
That's completely different, dude.
Yeah, it's just stupid. His whole freaking argument was dumb. Like, clearly that's what went to me too. Like, one thing I kind of was like iffy about though was when in the film, at least, when Harvey Milk was saying like for everyone to like basically like out themselves or to like out other people, I was like, that's kind of iffy. But what I saw on here, I don't know if that exactly was true, but what he did encourage was like during like, you know, pride marches and stuff like that, to like have a, oh my God, what is it? Like a sign that you create and to say like where you're from like the country, to show like how far, like, I guess homosexuality, like it's like all over basically. So he wanted to show that. So I think during one of the parades, he had a sign that said like New York or whatever.
Well, Harvey did out somebody. Yeah. So the story is that basically whatever president it was, I think it was Gerald Ford. Somebody tried to assassinate him, but there was like a person who saw the attacker in like a, basically got them to point the gun to the ground and they shot the pavement instead. And so that person was like a hero for, you know, saving the president's life. And that person is actually Harvey's ex-lover's ex. So he knew that. And so he basically outed that guy saying, look, gay men are also heroes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn. Cause he was like, this is an opportunity to show that, you know, it's not just, it's gay men are also heroes.
He's basically like, you know, a gay person. So like, you know, or you have interactions with gay people and you like look up to gay people or whatever. And so it's like, stop being like weird about it, people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, but obviously it was like awkward because I guess the guy, I guess had gone on like pride marches, done stuff too, but his family didn't know. So I guess his mom was like really upset. And then Gerald Ford only sent him a thank you card. And Harvey was like, he only did that because he was gay. I was like, I don't know. I mean, you don't know for sure. It's kind of an awkward thing, you know, because
why I was like, I didn't know how I felt about that in the film, but they didn't really like go in, like, I don't know, like they kind of obviously in that scene, he did talk about it, but they didn't like ever bring it up again. Like, what was the repercussions of outing people or anything like that? So I don't know.
Well, because obviously in our day and age, it's like that's, you shouldn't be outing people, but we also know a lot more gay people in our life. So to us, it's like every other person is gay. You know what I mean? So we know so many. It's like, it's what I, whereas maybe in the 70s, they just felt like it was a very small group of people versus now it's like, no, it's like everybody's gay.
Everybody. Okay. So now we're going to kind of get into the assassination bit. So on November 10th, so I'm going to kind of go a little bit into like the leading up to this too, of the assassination. So on November 10th, 1970, also, sorry, another tangent, another side thought, all this happened in my birthday month and the month that we're currently in. So I was like, oh my God, this is kind of crazy.
I totally didn't even put that together that it's in November.
Yeah, we're in November. So anyways, on November 10th, 1978, 10 months after he was sworn in, Dan White resigned his position on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, saying that his annual salary of $9,600 was not enough to support his family. Within days, White requested that his resignation be withdrawn and he be reinstated, and Mayor Moscone initially agreed. However, further consideration and intervention by other supervisors convinced Moscone to appoint someone more in line with the growing ethnic diversity of White's district and the liberal leanings of the Board of Supervisors. Moscone planned to announce White's replacement on November 27th, 1978. A half hour before the press conference, White avoided metal detectors by entering City Hall through a basement window and went to Moscone's office, where witnesses heard shouting followed by gunshots, which I'm like, y'all better up that fucking security after that.
Do you want me to tell you that actually they upped the security at that time because what was happening at Georgetown? Did you remember?
Like, oh, yeah. Quote? They did mention that like when I was doing this. Yeah,
so actually the security was already up, but
he still evaded it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. White shot Moscone in the shoulder and chest, then twice in the head. Also, I was kind of shocked though at this point, like in the film, obviously, like I knew something was coming, but like, I mean, obviously I knew like Harvey Milk was going to, you know, not live in the end of this film, but I don't know. I was still kind of just like, I was just still shocked. So yeah, White shot Moscone in the shoulder and chest, then twice in the head. White then quickly walked to his former office, reloading his police-issue revolver with hollow-point bullets along the way, and intercepted Milk, asking him to step inside for a moment. Diane Feinstein heard gunshots and called police, then found Milk face down on the floor, shot 5 times, including 2 in the head. Soon after, she announced to the press, "Today, San Francisco has experienced a double tragedy of immense proportions. As president of the Board of Supervisors, it is my duty to inform you that both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed. And the suspect is Supervisor Dan White. Milk was 48 years old. Moscone was 49. Within an hour, White called his wife from a nearby diner. She met him at a church and was with him when he turned himself in. Many people left flowers on the steps of City Hall. And that evening, 25,000 to 40,000 formed a spontaneous candlelight march from Castro Street to City Hall. The next day, the bodies of Moscone and Milk were brought to the City Hall Rotunda where mourners paid their respects." And I'm just going to quickly talk about his trial. During the end of the movie, we see that Dan White's attorney used the Twinkie defense, which I've heard of that defense before. but I didn't realize this was like where it came from. So yeah, he used a Twinkie defense to try and get his client off. And this is a true thing that actually happened. In general, his trial wasn't really set up in a way to like uphold justice. Right. The jury was made up of white middle-class Catholic men. And this part also was like, what the fuck? Some of whom cried during White's recorded confession. And I guess even like the person who was questioning him, like thanked him for his like honesty or whatever. I'm just like, right, are you fucking kidding me? So White was acquitted of the first degree murder charge on May 21st, 1979, but found guilty of voluntary manslaughter of both victims. And he was sentenced to serve 7 2/3 years with the sentence reduced for time and served in good behavior. He would be released in 5.
Yeah.
Bullshit. All of it. Bullshit. It's and horrible. Obviously it caused some riots after this, the whole
I white night riots and stuff. So the riot happened, I guess, like somebody questioned them, like, why are you doing this? And he's like, oh, because we ate Twinkies. Like that was their response, something like that.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, dude, honestly,
it's fucking ridiculous.
That reasoning is horrible. And then the like 7 years for two people, two innocent people. And you would never get away with that now.
Yeah. So one of the critiques I saw for this film was just that it wasn't like gritty enough, I guess, in the sense of like what actually like happened. Like obviously, like, you know, they cut away from a lot of like the police brutality against gay people and stuff like that, and I think they felt like it should have been included just to really grasp the, like, you know, how fucking crazy all that shit was. And
well, because the police department was like totally on Dan White's side, I guess they wore shirts that said like free Dan White.
Yeah,
they were all his buddies, I guess. Even when he was in prison, he was just like joking around with them. It's disgusting. I can't believe that was like the police department at the time.
And then when he got out, he committed suicide, and I'm not one little bit upset about it.
Well, I'm upset like, that they gave him like an honorable like kind of funeral, I guess, you know, they
really
something like that. They like his tombstone that says like he's a veteran, blah blah blah. I don't know, they did something kind of like nice, I guess. Really,
that's ridiculous. Also though, I just can't believe he would do that to his family, like obviously his wife and his child. Like I understand, like he was like, I don't know, he was going through something. That's why I kind of wanted to like look more into
it. I'll tell you.
Okay,
so I don't know much, but he was born in Long Beach, actually, but he was raised in San Francisco, and he actually was expelled from school for violence.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like,
and then he became a police officer. And then he ran.
Hello? For
wow.
So that's like the most I read. He's the second one out of 9 kids. So there's a lot of people. I mean, I just felt like when I read the whole, like he was expelled from violence, I was like, okay, these are the things that we have to recognize now because of what happened, you know, previously. So they said something like he was he's the type of guy who would hold a grudge, you know.
Obviously
he was the type of, it was very, everything that they were saying like about him, it was like, yes, like no wonder this happened. He held grudges, he would get upset if you like turned your back on him, felt any betrayal. He tried to pretend like he was all for gay rights, but actually he was not. And I think he only did that to try for like personal gain. So
definitely
it was ridiculous. And yeah, it's really insulting to Harvey and George for what for the conviction they did for Dan. But this is completely off topic, but I thought it was like a crazy time because of during that time Georgetown was happening. So it's like the mass suicide.
Because it all basically happened like
literally like this mass suicide happened. So that's why they upped the security, because the mayor, George Moscone, was worried that, you know, they would come to him for whatever reason. Because I think they tried to send somebody out there to see if they could negotiate with him, and that person got killed. That's why George was worried. And then this happened. And this is completely off topic, but I don't know if you read that Dan actually was planning to kill 4 people. He was planning to kill George, Harvey, this lady named Carol, and Willie Brown. And Willie became the mayor like during the Princess Diaries time. He was in the movie The Princess Diaries. Do you remember?
No, I
His
don't.
His line was like, hilarious. It never comes down on the Holy Brown.
Oh my God.
Something like that. I was like, anyways, so what I'm trying to say is that Diane, what's her last name? Feinstein?
Yeah.
So she became mayor right after, or not. Yeah. Was it right after George?
I think so, because she was like president of the supervisors, I think.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah.
So I thought that was super crazy because there's a couple times in the movie where he's like talking to Diane and stuff like that. So that's another reason why I think that Harvey could have been mayor, because he was good friends with George. He was good friends with Diane. He also was friends with Willie. And Diane was the mayor at the time during the Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez. And I remember Diane specifically because I went to go look it up, because everyone was kind of criticizing her because she kind of gave away information about the evidence that they had, and they were like, oh, that messed everything up. And I'm like, Diane does have a big mouth, because like right after these two were killed, she immediately was like, I have an announcement.
And yeah, and then she was like, and the suspect is Dan
Yeah,
Whiteley.
exactly. And then actually, when Dan was released from prison, she even made an announcement like, Dan might be coming back to San Francisco. We should not allow that. And I kind of was like, I don't know. Like,
Damn.
I thought that was a little bit messed up, but then I kind of overall, I don't really care that much because what he did was fucked up.
Just, it's not very professional of her to like just
I agree.
quickly, do that type of thing. But,
Yeah, because she quickly turned the city against him, and they're all like keeping an eye out for Dan. And the second anyone saw him, of course, I'm sure they like treated him
Oh,
poorly.
yeah.
So, yes, professionalism, that's where it's like that wasn't great. So it's just funny because like Diane's just,
Yeah.
I'm here to tell you everything.
Yeah, and I just think Dan in general just was he his because obviously there was a shift in like the people that were being like voted into these offices, because I guess even there was like the first black woman, I believe it was, and like there was a Chinese like all these people who were getting voted into the office. So I think things were like shifting in general, and I think he was just like he was just behind the times basically, and he just couldn't handle it, and I think he felt like everyone was against him. But it's like, no, bro, you're just like you're staying in the past when people are trying to move forward towards like a different
Well,
future and stuff. And it's just like, come on.
I'm sure his community was the same way, and they put a lot of
But
pressure on
even
him,
his community was changing. That's
That's
why
true.
George
But what I mean is like
Moscone,
the
yeah.
small, like maybe
Oh,
his
I see.
family,
Yeah.
he's like
Oh,
the
yeah.
Irish Catholic, group. I'm sure they were like, I don't like what's changing. You need to make sure it's everything stays the same. And
Yeah,
I'm sure
totally.
that pressure on top of like everything else is worse. But then again, I think that Dan needed help a lot sooner.
Oh, for sure. What do you think about like what they were saying about him possibly being closeted? Because I didn't see anything
I
online that
don't
said like
think
there was nothing
so.
online that said he was or whatever. They were just saying like I think that was just I don't know if even Harvey actually believed that. I just know in the film they mentioned it, and I'm like I don't know if that's I don't know because he initially liked Harvey, but I think that's because he thought him and Harvey could work together towards certain things, and it just didn't work out that way.
I think there's just too little evidence to really
Yeah, I was
make
like,
that
I'm
type
not
of
gonna, I don't really have an
decision.
opinion on it.
No,
I'm just
yeah.
like, regardless, like, there is no excuse for whatever he did. So I don't know. Thanks for joining us this week on the Internet Historians. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and give us a rating. We would also love to connect with you. So give us a follow on Instagram and subscribe to us on YouTube. Next week, we're going to be discussing Christine Collins from the movie Changeling. And that will also be our last episode of this season. So don't forget to tune in. Thanks again. And we will see you next week. Bye.
Bye.